What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Fitness Stuff for Normal People podcast. I'm Mariana.
And I'm Tony.
And the fitness industry right now, kind of in general, is not what it could be. It's become something built on everything and anything that can grab your attention for clicks and money, just directing attention away from what actually matters. The bottom line is we're not trying to provide just another fitness podcast, but completely change the fitness industry for the better. By giving you the knowledge and tools so you have confidence in applying the best possible training and nutrition into your own lives. Where today we are doing part two of a two-part series uncovering the top 10 fitness, health and fitness trends in the fitness industry that are 110% a waste of money, straight up scams that could be saving you hundreds if not thousands of dollars over the course of just a few months. Last week, we did the first five, and today we are breaking down the next five, giving you the science and research to explain why these are not worth your time or money. And before we get into that, if you want to support us, the best way to do so is by leaving us a five-star review wherever you're listening, if you haven't already. And you can also follow us on Spotify so you can stay up to date on every new episode that we drop on Mondays.
If you ain't follow us on Spotify, what are you doing? What are you doing? And if you want more after each episode, join us over on Premium for just $5 a month, where you get bonus episodes every single Friday where we answer your questions. Access to full training programs like our high frequency full body, our ultimate push pull legs, or our newest to the glute Bible or glute growth program and the upper body focused program, more on delts, chest, back, and arm growth. And don't worry, we don't leave the legs behind in that one either. You also get other sick perks like weekly Legion supplement giveaways, exclusive discounts to companies like Oura Ring, high end blood work with Merrick Health, and so much more. That's $5 a month. The sign up for that is in the show notes down below. And before we jump into it, shout out to today's sponsor of the episode, the sponsor of every FS Pod episode, Legion Athletics. We're not going to spend a ton of time on them today because you know we freaking love them. Been using them for years before we even got sponsored on this podcast by them on episode number one. We love them for a few reasons. 100% of their supplements are backed by a scientific review board, backed and vetted. They're all third-party tested, and they even have a no questions asked money back guarantee. So if you try something new, you don't love it, even just the taste or didn't get you the results you wanted, let them know and they'll give you your money back, no questions asked. You can use the Legion link in the show notes below or type in code FSPOD, that's FSPOD, at checkout for 20% off your first order or double points every order after that. I think today at the end of the episode, we rank our top three scams that we covered out of the 10 from today's episode and before. I think we give our personal input. What are our top three?
That's gonna be
hard. Sound fair?
We could do it. Yeah.
Okay. Last week brought the heat, yo.
Yeah, but I think we have some piping hot tea to talk about first.
Crack the Coke, Diet Coke.
Crack the Diet Coke.
You talking about the Huberman hippies?
Yeah. The Andrew Huberman article from New York Magazine. I don't know if anyone's seen that.
Did it just come out yesterday? When did it come out?
It was really recent.
I know I just saw it pop up yesterday. That's why
March 25th. March 25th.
Oh, so that was Monday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you have time to read it?
I've read most of it. If you guys have listened to us, so you know we have talked about love Andrew Huberman, fans of Andrew Huberman. But there is this Huberman effect that so many people take everything that he says as like scripture and lives, eats, sleeps, breathes whatever he says and doesn't even like raise an eyebrow to it. No questioning it. What Andrew Huberman says is right. And there's a tendency to like embellish a little bit of stuff. And, you know, that's fine. Sometimes. Some people do it. And he is like a god amongst the health community. And sometimes that isn't always the best thing and can lead people astray. And this article that came out about him, I don't know, what were your first thoughts about it?
I mean, honest, because I love him as a person. And I feel like I have a different relationship with a lot of people or to him than a lot of people. Like, I like a lot of people that say a lot of things that I disagree with too. Because he's exaggerated some things here and there, which I don't agree with. But I think overall, I really enjoy him as a person. At first, I had a little bit of mixed feelings because I'm like, I know journalism plays a big role in informing the public, sometimes necessitating things like this, like criticizing or scrutinizing public figures that need to be. Like, I really think there's a fine line between constructive critique and content that might be more of just like a hit piece. And I'm going to be honest, like this just felt kind of like a hit piece.
Oh my gosh.
I completely agree. It was all focused on his personal life, like things that the public really doesn't need to know. And then kind of extrapolating it out, like casting everything he's done professionally in a bad light. Mm-hmm. And it was all surrounding things in his personal life. Like, oh, he's this perfect person on his podcast, but he doesn't practice the self-discipline and all the things that he does in real life. It's like, no one's freaking perfect. Like, you can't expect anybody to be perfect. And I hate
That was my first instinct is like, you know, I feel for people and like this got crazy personal. There are a few things I pulled out that I was like, I felt like there was a lot of potential for this to be something good. It could have been constructive. It could have not just targeted him, but maybe a handful of influential people like him kind of highlighting, you know, you can't take everything these people say as something you need to be doing. And sometimes it's a bit extreme. Like I thought there was potential for that good. And you even see it a little bit like in one piece, they mention Athletic Greens and they said, Huberman gives a lengthy endorsement of a powder formerly known as Athletic Greens and now AG1. It's one thing to hear Athletic Greens promoted by Joe Rogan. It's perhaps another to hear someone who sells himself as a Stanford University scientist just back from a lab to proclaim that this $79 a month powder covers all your foundational nutritional needs.
Yeah.
But they dive a little bit deeper into AG1. I think that highlighted perfectly the direction that this could have gone in and not just singling out Andrew Huberman. Because so many people on his level do that. And that's an actual problem that people need to be made aware of. And there was an opportunity here. And especially with such a big platform like New York Magazine, huge opportunity to educate consumers. And this just got so personal that his fan base that sees this, they're not going to see the AG1 thing and think, oh, maybe I don't need this. They're going to see everything else and be like, this is so rude and out of pocket.
I think anything that good that could have came from it was erased by like the personal attacks.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And like even like just the gossipy stuff, like I know I didn't even the pieces of it that were saying how he's kind of flaky and non-responsive and how that's a bad judge of character. I'm like, this dude's a Stanford professor, host of the world's biggest podcast and is traveling around the world. And they're complaining about like not getting a text back or an email in time. I'm like, have you never been like, are you just sitting at home watching your phone for notifications to pop up? Have you never been busy in your life before? Like it was just it got too gossipy. And I think you're right. Like it erased any good that could have come from it. Yeah, but I think anyone who's read it would see that pretty clearly. Like, I feel like it's dominated by the gossipy stuff, like 80, 90% personal gossipy and then 10% productive. Mm-hmm. But that was, if you haven't read it, you can check it out. It was really one-sided. Mm-hmm. I don't think that does a good job of convincing anybody. I think all it is people who don't like Huberman are going to dislike him more and people that like him are going to like him more. It didn't bring anyone closer together.
Anyways, we just had to talk about that because I feel like it just was, were we last week? Yeah, because last week we talked about AG1 and
that was good timing.
Yeah, so
that was really good timing. So we're going to pick up where we left off. So we did the first five last week and we're going to five more, completing the list of top 10 scams, waste of money, things that are inherently just pieces of crud, to put it politely. Now we're going to start off this list. And again, kind of like the CGM piece or the blood sugar insulin piece like last week, this encapsulates a lot, this section. And that is really these selling of fat burning workouts, fat burning devices, spot reduction techniques that you see in a lot of different areas. And we're going to talk about, spoiler alert, cryotherapy a little bit later, but how they can target fat loss and how spot reduction or losing fat in a certain area or targeted fat loss is a real thing, doing these workouts, doing these devices. Or the popular device, which thank God has lost popularity over the last year, is Lumen. Do you remember that?
Or oh my God, they used to reach out,
Hack Your Metabolism company, where it seemed like when you look at it, they position themselves and frame themselves as a really professional scientific device to help you lose fat. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't come off scammy, except for the way they pose, like, hack your metabolism. But it's that device where you blow into it, especially, and it's like, oh, you're burning fat or you're burning carbs for fuel right now. You should spend more time doing this stuff. And it pretty much tells you when you're burning the most fat. But we're going to explain why this just doesn't make any logical sense when you break things down. And I wanted to start by a study that we've talked about that just came out a few months ago that we've mentioned in passing, but haven't really gone into the details before on this show. And that is a new study published. It was in 2023 with the title, the blatant title should tell you what this is going into. Abdominal Aerobic Endurance Exercise Reveals Spot Reduction Exists, a randomized control trial. That's the title. This proves that spot reduction exists. And I saw it all over social media. I was sending you the posts and things like that. Spot reduction, just for those unclear with that, this just refers to selective fat loss. So meaning, you know, I can target fat loss in my belly by doing abdominal core exercises, or I can target fat under my arm by working out my triceps more. So we're talking about this spot reduction first, but then how it transfers over. The study took 16 males and split them into two groups. So 8 people in one group, 8 people in another group. The abdominal group, is group one, did 27 minutes on the treadmill and then core exercises to finish for a total of 84 minutes. So they did that several times a week. So 84 total minutes per workout, 4 workouts through
the week. Oh, okay.
The control group, I put this in quotes because the study design, really weird. The control group, or the people that they were comparing fat loss and abdominal fat loss to, just did 45 minutes on the treadmill at the same intensity. So right off the bat, I don't want to say like red flag, but one of the groups is exercising twice as much as the other group. Just want to point that out here. Twice as much as the other group. But we're going to move on. Now, the groups trained like this for 10 weeks, and when the results came back, the group that trained abs ended up losing more abdominal fat than just the cardio-only group. And people heard this and they went nuts. Like, this was, I was seeing this at least, I think, a dozen times on social media using those words. Spot reduction exists, and it's to people doing a core exercise or doing an ab rollout or whatever. But there's a few problems I wanted to bring up with this study. First, there were 16 people, 8 in each group. The research with this few people means that any data collected does not transfer over to a population.
Yeah, second, you have to have a sample size of 30 or more to make a statistically significant generalization to the population as a whole. So you can't draw any conclusions unless you have 30 or more.
So this was half of the bare minimum. And even those, it's like, okay, a little bit like might be a reach. Second, the control was terrible. Okay, like, is anybody shocked that the group that exercised twice as much lost more body fat and abdominal fat than the group that exercised half as much? That shouldn't be that mind-blowing to most people. The third thing, there was zero control for diet. Zero. Mm. Zero control for diet, which we kind of know is the one thing that really is going to determine whether or not you lose weight. Fourth is that they used the DEXA scan to measure these results, which is a pretty dang accurate way to measure body composition changes. But the changes that they reported that supposedly show that spot reduction exists were in the 1-ish% range of body fat. And DEXA scan has a range of about 2.5 to 3.5% inaccuracy on any given day. So that's one thing that, again, doesn't invalidate anything by itself. But the other piece of this that people forget when they started posting this is that there are countless other studies with much larger test groups that show that targeted fat loss does not exist when you pair these groups together, when you're training one leg and not the other leg, one arm and not the other arm, your core or no core training. There are countless other studies. So when all the evidence previously says, no, this isn't really a thing, and then one study with 8 people that were in the group that showed something may have an effect, that does not mean that something exists or disproves. The whole thing blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Right? This is not proof that spot reduction exists. So that's piece one. That's about spot reduction. What about workouts that put you in the fat burning zone, like the 12-3-30 workout that went viral that still kind of is common today?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it is. I still get tagged in videos, and every now and then I'll get something on my For You page, not even specifically 12-3-30, but just something about doing an incline walk on the treadmill. Like, Something about it burning fat. Like, I didn't lose my belly fat until I
did this.
It's just someone walking and it'll be a lot of text on the screen and they'll be like, this is the ultimate hack.
That is always what it looks like too. It's someone walking and then just a paragraph on the screen, that kind of, which I want to be clear. This is not a bad workout. This is not a bad, that's not what we're saying here at all. The 12-3-30 walking, we're big fans if you've listened to this podcast before. Walking, one of the best things you can do, I think, for sustainable weight loss, for overall health, longevity, for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Okay, but why and how these things are marketed, or what this Lumen device tells you that's over $100 that tells you whether you're in the fat burning zone or if you're burning more carbohydrates, is this. Okay, the fat burning zone is usually referred to as a specific heart rate zone, or where your heartbeat is, where you're burning predominantly body fat over stored carbohydrates. Okay, a range of beats per minute where your body is utilizing more fat for fuel than stored carbs. That is a very real thing. It's a very real thing. So to understand this, we have to understand how our metabolism works during exercise. Okay, so your body uses several different sources of energy to stay alive and to fuel physical activity. The main ones being stored carbohydrates and stored fat. Okay, it also uses different processes, right, known as energy systems that we're not really going to talk about as much, that transform those carbs and fats into usable energy for the cells. But at rest, this is the important piece, when your heart rate is low, your body is getting almost all of its energy from fat. It's a very efficient and bountiful fuel source. So Marianne and I right now, we're sitting here recording this podcast. If you're sitting down, if you're driving and you're listening to this, congratulations, you're burning predominantly fat to keep you alive right now, right? It's a great thing. The problem with this is you're not burning a lot of calories when you're at rest, right? Like, we're not burning an insane amount of calories right now. So the absolute fat burn isn't that much. Now, the solution to that problem would be, well, you can just work out at a higher intensity that burns more calories, but this has a little side effect. And this is the sales piece of all these. At a higher intensity, your energy systems aren't able to process fat quickly enough to keep up with the demand for your muscle. So you start metabolizing more and more carbs for fuel. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the downside of this. Now, once you're exercising, and this is different for every single human, at about 60 to 80% of your max heart rate, your body is getting about half or more of its energy from carbohydrate stores and half from fat stores, right? This is where people try and coin the max fat oxidation rate. Okay, so working out at higher intensities like sprinting, your muscles are getting most of their energy, if not all, from stored carbs and almost none from fat. So the idea of these workouts is to work out at a low intensity, but where you're still kind of burning through some calories, to where you're staying in that fat burning zone. So you're not switching over to burning mostly carbohydrates. And there's really just two main problems with this, or the idea of, and this is any diet like keto, where the selling point is, oh, well, if you eat more fat, your body burns more fat as fuel. That is true. But there's two problems with these style of thinking. The first is your body essentially calibrates and balances fat and carb burning over a 24-hour period. And this is well documented. So when you burn more fat and less carbs during a workout, like walking on the treadmill for 30 minutes where you're burning more fat than carbs, you're going to burn less fat and more carbs later in the day, and vice versa. If you have a high intensity sprinting HIIT workout where you're burning predominantly carbs, your body's going to shift over and calibrate to burn more fat through the rest of the day. So over a 24-hour period, you're going to burn about the same amount, period. Okay, regardless of what you burn off in a small portion of your day in a workout. And the same goes again for diets like keto, anything else. It's how much fat is being stored versus burned. Because if you're storing just as much as you burn, it doesn't matter if you burn a lot or a little. If you're storing just as much, nothing's really going to change. And the second problem, and this is one that I think is even bigger, is that people usually limit themselves in their workout thinking that less intensity is always better because it keeps you here. And I'm not saying this in like the sense that, again, we love the 12-3-30 workout. We love walking as a form of cardio. But I do see people, and I don't know if you have either, transfer this over to all of their training. Their weight training, their everything, it's at a much lower intensity because that's almost reiterating the fact that, oh, it's better. Less intensity equals better all the time.
I've been seeing like a lot of this push for this low intensity workout much more.
Which has its place in time, but just not for that reason, right? Like we don't shut up about how increasing your step count or walking more can be one of the lowest hanging fruits for a cut phase, a fat loss phase, one of the lowest hanging fruits because it's not going to increase your hunger. It burns a good amount of calories. It keeps your digestion mobile. It makes life easier without all those small things. That's why we love it, not because it's inherently better or worse. So all of these workouts, devices, Lumen, diets, anything that says, hey, this is going to increase fat oxidation or fat burning, it's just giving you information that does not matter at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
Like, if you can take anything away from this, just because you're using fat for fuel does not mean you are going to be losing fat. You still have to be in a calorie deficit.
Losing fat and fat loss are not the same thing. And that people get that word mixed up all the freaking time. All the time. If you're not in a calorie deficit, you could spend 24 hours a day in this fat burning zone. You're not going to lose fat.
Yeah.
That's the end of the day. So
you could use it, but you can't lose it unless you're in an energy deficit.
Yeah. So use that as a guiding principle for any product, workout, supplement, a lot of these things that supposedly increase burning fat or fat burning. That's not the same thing as fat loss, even though it is marketed as
the same.
So that encapsulates a frick ton of stuff going on here. Now, on to the next, which I think maybe not the biggest scam, but I feel like this next one has been the most trending piece of the last several years. Would you say so?
Yeah. And this is anything that claims to heal your gut health supplements. I'll run through a few specifically. That whole entire industry is booming. And there is a part of it that I like that we're talking about gut health more. It is so important. And it used to not be considered as much. But we as a society oversimplify the shit out of gut health. And supplement companies just abuse this whole idea of consumers being misinformed about it, and they just get away with it. They just keep selling shit because gut health sells. Debloating sells. And I think it is this gut health supplements, gut health products, healing your gut is a modernized version of just losing weight, trimming belly fat. I mean, they're using a different topic, but what is the main thing that mainly women want to get? And it's targeted mainly towards women.
Oh,
what do they want to get out of it? They want to not be bloated. That's the hugest thing. They want to improve their
digestion.
Bloating
is by far the biggest thing.
People could talk about all they want. You know, gut health is so important. Yes, it is. But the biggest piece that sells here is reducing your bloating. Before and after pictures of being bloated. All about appearance. That is overwhelmingly why people buy these products.
Because what are the products that you've seen the most that target this? I mean, we talked a little bit about Bloom Greens and AG1 who market this.
Yes. Yeah.
What are some other ones that you think?
Green powders, which we talked about those last week. Digestive enzymes.
L-glutamine is one that popped up on my timeline.
L-glutamine, probiotics. I would say those are so greens, L-glutamine, probiotics, I would say are the biggest ones. And I'm going to get into a little bit more detail about those. But kind of just getting into why, in general, why you can really just be wasting your money on most gut health products is because your gut is so incredibly complex. And no one single product is going to heal your gut. It is so individualized. So what works for someone most likely isn't going to work for you. You can't take what someone else experiences and attribute it to one singular product. There are over 100 trillion bacteria in your colon and large intestine. They have many different functions, are targeted by so many different factors of your overall lifestyle habits, diet, exercise, and you can't take one thing to change your gut health. It's simply impossible because it's influenced by so many factors. And
number always scares me. 100 trillion.
Yeah. And people really underestimate this complexity. I mean, some factors that I think of first that are the most common that also influence your gut health, aside from diet, which diet is the biggest piece, but you have your stress and anxiety, under eating or having an irregular eating schedule, poor sleep, having really shitty sleep, a sedentary lifestyle, sitting most of the day, not walking at all, not drinking enough water. Those are huge. Those are so important to your overall gut health and how your digestive health is, how you're bloating, that if you are not considering those pieces, again, along with diet, diet should be addressed first, but a gut health supplement isn't going to even come close to touching that. Not even close. So, and those are all big pieces, right? Improving your overall diet, eating more whole foods, less processed foods, improving your sleep, focusing on your stress, walking more. Like, that's a lifestyle change. People want a quick and easy fix. There's no quick and easy fix to gut health. And what,
no.
And you might even be working on all of these things and still have issues because maybe you have an underlying gastrointestinal disease or disorder that you individually need to address with a doctor and you couldn't know unless if you get tests. I get so passionate about this as someone, I have IBS. So IBS can, there's so many common symptoms that anyone, even without IBS, could experience. And the approach to addressing it is so individualized and so daunting and so annoying. It's hard to be taken seriously. You go through so many tests to figure out what's going on, just get told that you're perfectly fine or it's all in your head. And to oversimplify it to just being, I took this greens powder and I cured my gut health. And it's like, I don't know if anyone listening to this, if you actually, like, maybe you have IBS, you have a known GI disease or disorder, you just know how infuriating it is. It's like with Tony with the continuous glucose monitors as a type 1 diabetic, someone trying to sell you. It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah, like, I wish I didn't have to use. Like,
seriously.
If you're not addressing those big components, someone's robbing you blind if you go and buy a gut health supplement, assuming it's going to even do a single thing if you're not trying to improve
Which
one of those factors.
Makes me laugh when you look at especially the Bloom Greens. That, not to target Bloom Greens. Actually, yes, to target Bloom Greens.
Yeah, target Bloom Greens.
All the people you meet, like these are like LA influencers whose breakfasts are an iced coffee and a vape. And they're like shocked that they have gut health problems in the first place. And they're like, this greens thing should help. It's like, maybe if your breakfast wasn't an iced coffee and a vape, you wouldn't be experiencing the problems that you're experiencing right now. That always makes me laugh the most is they're usually the people selling it are the people who live the lifestyles that should have terrible gut health that are trying to band-aid it up in the first place. That reminds me, one of my favorite dietitians on social media, her name's Caroline Biddle. I don't know if you know who she is, but she made this post one time that killed me where she held up a grocery bag and there was nothing in it.
I've seen this.
Yeah, the grocery bag with nothing in it. And it's flat. It's like, oh, it's flat. And then she just drops what a breakfast would be like, some oatmeal, a banana, and some juice or whatever. And she drops it in the bag and the bag gets bigger. And she's like, this bag is your stomach. When you put things into it, it expands because there was nothing in it before. Like, it blows my mind because a lot of people for bloating will mistake just having substance in their stomach as bloating. It's like, yes, that gets bigger.
Yeah, and some people, after eating and drinking, are way more prone to bloating than others. That's not something you can fix. Like, some people could eat, I have friends that could eat a whole hamburger and, like, some from In-N-Out, the animal style fries, and you wouldn't even notice. Versus, like, if I ate a handful of fries, I would notice. You can't change that. Like, that's just how your body responds to having food. Some people are going to be way more bloated. Some people are going to take a little bit longer to digest things than others. Like, that, and it's perfectly normal. And especially throughout as the day goes on, I'm like, I don't know. Like, if you're comparing yourself in the morning versus the evening, like, you have all of this food, you've had some stressors, you've, like,
Like, I wish
of course
you could sell
you're going to be
morning.
Bloated at the end of the day. Like, so that's the first piece of, like, how some people might think, like, oh, how could you just generalize this to all gut health, like, marketing and products? Yeah. And it's because of that, what I just talked about, like, how oversimplified they make it and how people just assume that it's that easy to improve your gut health. But some of these, because I know we talked about greens powder last week, I want to talk about L-glutamine because it's super popular. Still super popular. We've talked about it before, I think last year. People don't even really know what it is, but L-glutamine is this amino acid found in protein-rich foods, and the majority of people get enough through your diet unless if your body is under significant stress. So L-glutamine is not something people are lacking at all. unless if you just underwent surgery, you could have some sort of sickness that you're fighting off.
That's what some people. Just like normal, I had a stressful day at work, to clarify that too, right? Like this is, from what I've read, it's big illnesses, injury, or surgery, like massive stressors on your body is when you might see a benefit from using something like this, right?
Yeah. It's usually administered and used in a hospital setting or after surgery. If you just experienced a traumatic event, that's where your body may be in need of more L-glutamine that you can't get from your diet. Because it plays a really important, it's so important. It plays an important role in your intestinal cell growth, repair, and maintenance. And because it is conditionally essential, that's like the big piece, conditionally, it means that you only need to supplement with it if you have experienced a traumatic event, like surgery, illness, or injury.
Mm-hmm.
So most people have enough L-glutamine. Supplementing with it is not going to do anything more for you because it's not like you're it's not like you're insufficient in L-glutamine. That's very, 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 very rare. So because it does play this role in intestinal cell growth, that's where the popularity has come about for it improving gut health for people with IBS or leaky gut, because people will say, you know, it strengthens your gut lining. L-glutamine is important for the strength of your gut lining. You hear that because it is. It's true. So you hear that and you're like, oh, like this is very, very important for gut health. I need to supplement with this. It's going to improve my life. Unless if you have one of these traumatic injuries or sicknesses, or if you're going through surgery, you already have enough L-glutamine to exhibit that function that it's important for. So it's kind of just like, it really does not make sense to supplement with it, but that's kind of, it's like you take these nutrients and certain supplements and they have a specific role in the body. And people will take that role it already plays and say, you know, if you're supplementing with it, it's going to improve this tenfold, or not even talk about the fact that you already have enough. It's just like, because it does this, that means you can improve it and make it better and enhance it with a supplement.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Think about like magnesium, vitamin D, a lot of the stuff we talk about. It's like, if you're getting enough, you're not going to notice any more of the benefit. Like the benefits come from if you don't have enough to getting substantial amounts. That's where the benefits are seen.
Yeah.
Not pouring more on top of what you already have.
Yeah. It's much more likely that something else is going on. If this isn't invalidating anyone's gut health issues, people have them and they're a struggle. You know, I remember trying everything. When I hit rock bottom, I would try everything under the sun just because I felt so desperate. And this is before, you know, I learned about gut health. So I have that empathy for people like that, really, because you kind of feel helpless.
Yeah.
But hopefully this is eliminating your need to reach for certain products and waste your time and money on them, because it really is so unnecessary for the majority of the population.
What was the episode we just did about this? The 10 tips. I think it was episode 101, mm-hmm. where we talked about all the things that you can do to actually, because I was like, I know what you're talking about. That's where I felt when I was diabetic or things like this, is like you have all these problems and the doctor you go see, they kind of like brush it off. And you're like, well, this is still a big issue.
Yeah.
Like with gut health, I feel like especially it's like an unsolvable problem where you're going to try everything. So someone just saying, oh, this isn't going to work. That's why we made that episode in the first place.
Yeah.
To actually hopefully give you some direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another popular one. I wanted to bring this up, probiotics, because I take a probiotic. Mm-hmm. So I debated bringing it up because I'm like, well, there are very, very few products, that are designed well to potentially have an effect when addressing the big lifestyle habits and dietary habits. But there is an overwhelming amount of probiotics that are a waste of money. The majority on the market are not going to have an effect. And that's why I brought it up. So I want to say that to be clear, like, because or else I would feel like a hypocrite. And I'll talk about some probiotics that and how to choose the right probiotic. But that's why I felt like this was important, because more people need to know about how certain probiotics and a majority on the market are designed to have zero effect on your body. And a lot of people are wasting their money on them. And we have a whole episode on probiotics that you can listen to. I feel like we should link that in the show notes as well.
Oh, absolutely.
But so probiotics are supplements, so probiotic supplements specifically, contain live microorganisms intended to maintain or improve the good bacteria in your gut. So that's a great thing, right? And I think the field, like the area of probiotic research, is evolving so rapidly, and there's a lot of more like recent new ones that have a lot of potential to do a lot of good. So like I get excited about that growing area of research, but most probiotic supplements are ineffective due to their delivery system. So again, we're trying to increase the good bacteria in our gut, which means we need the live microorganisms to reach our small and large intestine where they exert their effect. Meaning taking this supplement has to bypass our stomach acid. It has to survive the very acidic environment in our stomach acid and reach our intestines alive. That is very rarely accounted for in the delivery system. So this could be the capsule that it's the probiotic is found in. And if you're not considering that, you are not going to have live microorganisms reaching your gut. A lot of these pills are going to completely dissolve in your stomach acid, and it's going to kill all of that bacteria because
some are even encapsulated. Like the
oh my God, the one in powders.
Well, that's the biggest problem I have with AG1 and Bloom Greens is they'll put probiotics in their powdered supplement and they will promote that it fixes your gut health, that it does anything that a probiotic could be tied to. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's not protected by it. The second that hits your stomach acid, it's dead.
Yeah.
It is useless. It is not making it all the way through most of your small intestine to the colon, large intestine where it needs to be.
Like, yeah.
They still put it in to market it because you can't, and it's not that much anyways that they put in those supplements, but.
No. Mm-hmm. So that is the biggest piece of why I say the majority of probiotics are going to be a waste of money, because you're taking things that they're not reaching the spot where they have their function, where they're exerting this benefit. If you are looking to choose a probiotic, one that, and again, just because there are a few out there that will reach your small and large intestine, doesn't mean that you're going to have these crazy benefits from it. A probiotic is almost like that extra, you know, potential push. Probiotics have the potential. They aren't there yet, but I think they have the potential to be the creatine of the gut health world if we're talking like 10, 15 years. Because if you are doing all the right things, if you are eating a mainly whole foods diet, getting your fiber in, moving your body, managing your stress, if you are addressing that, the probiotic is going to take your good gut health and level it up a little bit. It's going to level it up that small amount that some people may need that extra push to feel a little bit better, have a little bit better digestion. That is the potential it has. Also, probiotics are great after you go through antibiotics. Everyone needs to take a probiotic.
That was scary when we looked at that on the 10 Tips for Gut Health, episode 101. How terrible going through antibiotic treatment can be on your gut health.
Yeah. Oh. So a probiotic is going to be great for that. I mean, it takes time if you're eating foods, whole foods, and food that feed your good gut bacteria. Yeah, that's great. But it's going to take time to help that good bacteria re-flourish. So a probiotic can be helpful to rapidly improve that. But okay, so if you're looking for a probiotic, if you want to take the right one, you need to choose first a probiotic targeted to what you're trying to treat. So there are so many different strains and species of probiotics, and certain probiotic strains don't target gut health. They may be for immune health. They may be for vaginal health. You know, that is a thing. There's women's probiotics specifically targeted for that. Because you have microbiota in different spots of your body. Like you have microbes throughout your body. You can take ones for skin health. So you want to make sure the strain and species is specifically for gut health. Okay. How do you know this? I mean, you should go onto this product's website and they should have information about it, as easy as and simple as the company addressing this. They should highlight the strain in their probiotic and say what it is for. I'm not saying they have to go on this tangent. That's very general information. So if they have that somewhere, that's going to be a green flag. You also want some sort of proof of efficiency, some sort of lab testing for the efficacy of that specific strain. You want to see that somewhere. That's going to be a green flag. I'm not saying on the bottle, but on their website, you're going to get this information. And then you also want to make sure that the delivery system, so the capsule that it's found in, is going to bypass the stomach acid. And again, this is all information. If This costs money, a lot more money to address all of these factors from a company. So they are going to address all of these on their website. This isn't something that is going to be hidden if they do these things, because that's going to be their leverage in terms of selling this product to you, because it costs a lot more money to do these things. Mm. Seed, for example, I think Seed is a great, great example. Their product, they only have their probiotic. Like, that's what it is. It's one product. So they're very dedicated to that. And they were one of the first companies to make this cap. It's a capsule in capsule delivery system. So there's essentially two different layers to it. You have one layer that when you hit the stomach acid, it dissolves. And then the inside layer can bypass that stomach acid and reach your small and large intestine, which I think is so, not many people are going to think that's cool. I think that's so cool. That's just an example. Mm-hmm. Certain other capsules, you don't need those two layers, but it's almost like an insurance policy, having the double layer. Even if you create one that might survive, it's like, you don't always know. So I think that that's pretty cool. So you want to see that. The delivery system is going to reach your small or large intestine.
I was going to, like, to draw it into, like, the effect too of when we're talking about gut health supplements in general too. Even remember, if you have a probiotic with 10 billion live bacteria in it, remember that's 10 billion that you're putting a drop into 100 trillion. Like to simplify those numbers down, that is one drop in a bucket of 10,000 drops. Like, it's just putting one drop in there. Even 10 billion sounds like a massive number, but it's one drop. So if you're not doing anything else, I really recommend that episode 101 on the 10 tips, because most, if not all of them, are lifestyle, diet, activity, stress, like all those things that you can do to improve it. It's one drop in a 10,000 drop puddle. Mm-hmm. So remember that, and just to bring it to earth a little bit too. It does suck that so many of them, though, the greens powders, things like that, are marketed and they're allowed to market how good they are for your gut health. It's like they don't make it past your stomach, bro.
Yeah.
Which brings us on to the third one of today, the eighth on the list overall. This is another one that I got a lot of heat on when I made a post about scams in the industry. And a lot of people were up in arms about this one, which is cryotherapy, which I thought the trend of that was kind of over until I had talked about it. And then seeing how many people were like, live, die. And not to pick on the people who were commenting, but the people who were commenting were like pretty higher level athletes or very, very well off individuals. I mean, people that lived in $1 million houses, things like this. I'm like, okay, kind of makes sense why they're going to bat for cryotherapy. Because like a lot of these things, like the 12-3-30 workout we talked about earlier, cryotherapy is not bad for you in any way. It actually has some benefits, but that's not what this episode's about. We're not just saying what's good and what's bad. Cryotherapy, just to briefly explain what it is one of several versions of cold therapy involving skin exposure to ultra-low temperatures between negative 200 and negative 250 degrees Fahrenheit for a brief controlled time of about 1 to 3 minutes. Have you ever done that before, cryo?
I've done it one time and I hated it.
It's kind of, it wasn't nearly as cold feeling as I thought it would for being negative 200 degrees. I was like, okay, that was chilly, but not nearly to the effect of when I do like an ice bath or something like that.
Yeah,
but anywho,
why
this is on the list is that cryo claims, and this is in companies that sell it, studios that do cryotherapy, claim that it speeds up muscle recovery, prevents injury, reduces inflammation, pain, soreness, even impacts hormonal changes in growth hormone and testosterone, increases metabolism and aids in weight loss, and improves skin conditions and has an anti-aging effect. All of this along with boosting mood, energy, and mental well-being. Kind of like a magic panacea, silver bullet, cure to everything. Now, here's where the first problem really lines in with cryotherapy. The prices for a single session of 1 to 3 minutes in one of these chambers can range anywhere from I've even seen upwards of $100+ for a couple minutes in one of these, $30 to $100+ for a 3 minute session in one of these devices. And the idea of cold therapy that's been very popular as a topic with ice baths trending over the last year, it revolves around this concept called adaptive thermogenesis, which in brief is where the human body maintains an internal temperature of about 98.2 degrees Fahrenheit, give or take about 0.6 degrees in either direction. Giant shifts in external temperature end up causing a cascade of adaptive changes inside of the body so it can maintain this range. right? If you put your body outside and it's colder than 98.2 degrees, your body has mechanisms in place to keep it 98.2 degrees and not just shifting down to whatever temperature your surroundings are in. Same thing if you're too hot or in a sauna, it tries to keep your body down to that level. Okay. The easiest thing that I think we can all relate to is when you go in the sauna, you start to sweat, right? That's one of the cascade of events that happens to cool your body down to keep it in that temperature, one that we all are aware of. But there's just a few problems with this in particular. When you look at all of the options for cold therapy, the two main ones that stick out are cryotherapy and cold water immersion, which is ice baths or cold plunges. Those are the two that stick out to me. And there's several others that I just don't think are really worth going into, but there's something called thermal conductivity. But the thermal conductivity of water is a lot higher than it is in air. And that's just how well heat or cold transfers between two things. So the air and our bodies. Okay. The thermal conductivity of water is a lot higher than air, roughly 25 times greater than air. Okay. That's why you're able to step into a cryotherapy chamber at negative 200 degrees. And if you step in cold water at what, 45 degrees is what most ice baths are at, you'll be like, this is not the same thing. Even though there's a 200 to 300 degree difference in there, because water conducts that heat a lot different. This is mostly just because of how dense the particles in are in water compared to air, where they're much more spread apart. So heat is conducted away from the body at a much faster rate in cold water compared to just air. And this leads to a faster and more intense reduction in body temperature. You could last, I mean, probably 10 to 100 times longer in 45 degree weather outside than 45 degree water. I don't think anyone's going to argue that, because we've all been in that kind of climate.
Yeah.
At least once in our life. And because of this, all of the benefits that do come from cold therapy are exponentially higher and more pronounced in cold water compared to cold air or cryotherapy. Okay, so the internal temperature changes, the cognitive changes, reduction in inflammation, all of these changes are much more pronounced in cold water compared to cold air. That doesn't mean they don't exist, because they do. But for example, and this is even just looking at specifically cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, going into and looking at exposure into cold water, you see some massive differences. When people were put into a few minutes of 57 degree water, their cortisol saw a 20% increase, their epinephrine increased by 91%, and their norepinephrine increased by over 500% in the span of minutes. But anytime this has been tested in cryotherapy, you see zero to minimal changes in these neurotransmitters when it comes to the cognitive, the mood benefits from all this. And in fact, this is where there's zero data to support any change for cryotherapy is in your metabolism, in any hormone output, or recovery from injury. Although there is a slight reduction in inflammation, it's never been translated to shorten a recovery period from injury. So it might wake you up and it might give you more energy, because I don't know if you remember when you did it. I know when I got out of the cryotherapy, I was energized from being so cold. I was like jumping out. I was wide awake.
I did it when I was in Iceland. I just kind of had an indifferent experience with the cryotherapy. I didn't like it, but it wasn't like crazy.
But you're like, this is 100 times better than freezing in water. Same.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the biggest markets for cryotherapy, aside from rich people like getting them in their homes and stuff, but med spas. So med spas are like, if Tony is unfamiliar, it's like you'll go and get Botox or filler. Also, cryotherapy is so, so popular, and it's just abundantly marketed for fat loss. Like, that is strictly what cryotherapy is used for in these med spas, is for fat loss. I remember talking about it with the guy who does my Botox in my jaw. He's a nurse practitioner, and he's just constantly flooded with companies trying to sell him these cryotherapy chambers, because he doesn't have a med spa, but med spas are most people who just to become a medical injector or something, you don't have to go through much schooling at all. And so it's really shady, and it's so expensive at these med spas.
Yeah. And especially in the med spas, I've seen more targeted cryo, where someone will have a cryo gun.
Oh, for sure.
It goes over arms to say, oh, it'll tighten your arms and reduce your arm fat or your belly fat.
And they do cellulite.
And the crazy thing is, they will have, from the ones I've seen, they're not obviously edited. So they may be real. But before and after, it looks like things are tighter. The skin is tighter. There's less fat in an area like around your arms or your midsection. But like, just for the people who are like, well, yeah, what? How do you argue against that? Those are pictures. That's before and after. It's like, yes, the cold's going to tighten things up. Your body pulls blood into its internal organs. Ask any dude what happens in the cold, and you're going to get the answer that things usually tighten up a little bit. Okay? That just happens. So before and after, 100%, you might see arms or body tighten up a little bit. But go visit that person an hour later or 30 minutes later when they're just in a normal temperature room. And I guarantee you, it looks the exact same as when you started from. Because they say it freezes off fat cells. It eliminates fat cells. The claims of why it works is anything but the truth. Like, that's the funniest part about this. So why we list this as a waste of money and a scam is because it is $30 to $100 for a 3-minute session that they typically have you doing multiple times per week for small benefits. So sure, if you got millions in the bank account, you want to put one in your home. If I had millions of bucks, I would probably have one just because it wakes me up in the morning. I don't hate it as much as water. I would do it. I'm not arguing that it's bad for you. It does anything like this. It's
no.
Not. I'm just saying it's a waste of money. And you would probably see more benefit from just taking a simple cold shower for a few minutes. You don't even need the whole ice bath setup. So you're not going to notice. You're probably going to notice small benefits if you want to spend your money on this. But you could get a lot more from spending a lot less. And that's why I made this list, is because of the massive businesses that cryotherapy has now created.
Yeah.
What do we got for number 9?
Okay, so this one's a little bit more specific, but it's a sneaky one. I want to say MLMs. MLMs in general are multi-level marketing schemes, but I wanted to highlight a specific product that I was checking yesterday, and people are still selling these Arbonne products. There are so many multi-level marketing schemes. I mean, the Feel Good System is also one. But
Herbalife,
anything
is
that
the one
is
that sticks out to me too.
Yeah, is a multi-level marketing scheme. They're not going to say that. So you have to see the signs, and it is anything that is an MLM is going to be a scam and a waste of your money. I just use Arbonne as a specific example because it's still very popular and they have their like gut health product. And then I also wanted to bring up this Feel Good System because that's what our boy Rob, who is he's a blood sugar guy. He sells his Feel Good System. So these multi-level marketing schemes, they're known as a direct marketing or network marketing platform or setup to sell products directly to consumers using independent sales representatives. So an independent sales representative could be a TikToker. That's what these people selling it on TikTok. They are these independent sales representatives. And these companies tend to appeal to these new reps or recruits with the promise of wealth and independence. I mean, I honestly encourage you to go on TikTok and look up people's experiences with an MLM, or I used to work for an MLM. People talk about them who used to work for them. Crazy stories. Like, if that interests you, go listen.
I was gonna say, I haven't actually looked for that online, but I bet on TikTok you would find some. That actually gave me something to do later. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And so these companies use people instead of retail outlets to sell their products to consumers, and puts the responsibility for selling into the hands of these independent sales reps. So under this MLM model, the distributors are not employees for the company. They're technically individual business owners who recruit their own distributor networks to help them sell products, typically. And this model requires infinite recruitment of other people to sustain income. So whilst not illegal by definition, many MLMs have become infamous for their controversial business practices, and others have been revealed to be a little more than illegal pyramid schemes. But the Arbonne DeBloat drink I see a lot. It is a green gut glow bundle, $220. Okay. Most of these products in MLM supplement companies, they're not cheap. And they get you to buy not just one thing. Typically, they'll be in bundles for you to save more money. And they'll have these like in crazy discounts to make it look like you're saving so much money. But they make these false promises about healing your gut, reducing your bloating, all that same old nonsense. And this is typically what you'll see from an MLM. So if you're looking out for the red flags, they will target something that a lot of people can relate to. It's a vulnerable topic, may sound relatable, really like tug at your emotions a little bit in order to make it sound genuine. And that's what they use to sell. These common insecurities, they'll really leverage those.
Even just people buying them from other people, if you're not involved in the company, they put so little money, energy, and resources into making their products.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really anything that I think can sell. I know Herbalife is my least favorite one. They have a bundle because you don't shop by necessarily what supplement you want, like a protein powder. You do in like, what's your need? What's your lifestyle need? There's a GLP-1 nutrition companion classic. So people that are now taking Ozempic, we made this for you. It's only $180 for these three shakes, a protein shake, another protein shake that's slightly different, and then a greens powder. So little goes into them if you actually look at the nutrition. And the nutrition, it's not posted very clearly. Like you have to find out like what is actually in these things. Mm-hmm. Like what, there's not just the nutrition label posted right on front to show you what's inside. It's like you really have to search for it.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why. It's because when you look inside and compare it to anything else, you'd be getting so much higher quality for so much less money anywhere else. It's baffling to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate MLMs in general. They've had like Miralax, which is a laxative found in their product. That was disputed, brushed under the rug. It's like, are you kidding me? It's just like, of course you're not going to be bloated. They were slipping Miralax into their freaking deep bloat powder. Like, that makes you, that's a laxative. Yeah, like, that's
illegal.
I live
on the toilet. I'm losing weight so fast. It's like, I'm just pooping my brains out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's horrifying. Honestly, has there been a Netflix documentary on this? Because there should be. I'm telling you, if there hasn't been, there will be.
We should pitch Netflix. That would be a good one. Because I know we've talked about a lot on this show how messed up the supplement industry can be.
Mm-hmm.
These companies that run their business like this, Airbon, Herbalife, they are the picture perfect example of everything wrong in the supplement industry. If you want a perfect example of pretty much every practice that could go wrong in supplement making in the industry, look at them, for example. A lot of companies might do one thing or two things. These do them all.
Yeah.
That would be a great documentary. Now, to round off the list before we give our top three over the last two episodes, the craze of alkalizing diets, alkaline water, alkalizing supplements. Kangen water is a picture perfect example of this kind of things, but anything that's promoting alkalizing your body. Again, another FS Pod favorite, Gary Brecka, loves talking about alkalizing your body and the great things that can come from it. Now, when we're talking about alkalinity, to understand real quick, throwback to, if I remember right, this was my seventh grade science class when I was in a class of 32 people and I was one of two boys. I remember that. Mr. Hipley, I was one of two boys in a class of 32. And the way they set up the desks was like our two-person desk in the middle and then rows that like circulate the two boys in the middle. So it was just two boys. And I was the least confident kid in the world. It was terrifying. Like I was going to my mom asking if I could switch classes because I was like,
why were there only two boys?
I don't know. Ask Dunstan Middle School. Anywho. That's where I first learned about alkalinity. Now, if you throw back, most people in middle school somewhere learn this, but you learned about something called a pH scale. pH scale. Most people have heard the term before. Might not know exactly what it is, but have heard of a pH scale. And really, this is just a scale really on how to measure how acidic or alkaline a substance is, also known as basic, right? How alkaline or basic something is. The lower the number on the scale, the more acidic it is. For example, lemon juice is a 2. On the pH scale, because it's very acidic, where baking soda is very alkaline or basic with a 9 on this scale. And the pH scale, I don't think most people realize this, like most scales, it's logarithmic. It's not linear, which means each step on the scale represents a tenfold increase or decrease in acidity or alkalinity. So it's not like it goes up by one. That's a one-fold increase. It is a tenfold increase and decrease every single step you take. So for example, a substance with a pH of 6 is 10 times more acidic than one with a pH of 7. Okay, that's important to understand too.
Yeah.
And a substance with a pH of 5 is 100 times more acidic than something with a pH of 7. Now, the body, and inside the body.
I have to note real quick for anyone listening, I'm sure we have a few people in our audience who are in Gen Chem right now in college doing acid-based titrations. And like, or if you've done them in the past, this is, I apologize because it is traumatic. Acid-based titrations in chem lab, you're there for 3 hours to all of a sudden find out that the solution you are making that was supposed to be basic has a pH of 1. And it's the most horrifying experience. Every single person in Gen Chem has had that experience and it makes you want to die. So I'm sorry if this is triggering for anyone like it is for me.
Yeah, trigger warning. In Gen
Super camps. Niche, but Trigger also morning. Very relatable to STEM kids.
I guarantee we're going to get a couple of DMs after the episode being like, yo, he spoke to my soul. He spoke to my soul. Now, in the body, your body and blood, there's a very tight window of a pH level that exists. And that is between 7.35 to 7.45. Now, what happens is if the pH goes outside of this window, that very small window, very bad things start to happen. Okay. Sometimes even death. That's not an under or overstatement. Now, there's a lot of waters today that are marketed as high pH. Kangen is the biggest one that sticks out. And this is where the waste of money really comes from because high pH water is usually a buck or two more expensive. It's not, you're not spending thousands of dollars a year. Sometimes, maybe you are. But if you've never heard of Kangen water, which have you?
Yes. This was honestly 2 years ago. I used to make TikToks about this shit all the time. And now it's resurfacing again. And it pisses me off.
Now, yeah. Kangen water. Now, this is a brand of alkaline water produced by water ionizers manufactured by the Japanese company Enagic. I don't know how to pronounce that name. Enagic? Enagic? Mm. It's one of the two. Now, these ionizers filter tap water and then electrolyze it, which purportedly separates water into alkaline and acidic components. Now, to buy a Kangen water machine, you're looking at spending around $3,000 to $7,000 to put in your home to do this to your water, right? And of course, if you're spending thousands of dollars to put one of these in your home, which I actually believe is a multi-level marketing setup.
It is an MLM. Company. I was just going to say,
outside of this, it has a few promised or proposed benefits, right? You're spending thousands of dollars. It should be worth something. Tom freaking Brady drinks it. Now, the first is that it alkalizes the body. It claims to neutralize excess acidity in the body, which is caused by the modern Western diet, rich in processed foods, meats, and sugars. Okay? Which the Western diet is rich in those things. And supposedly that makes your body very acidic, and this is the way to neutralize that. Okay? The second is that it has antioxidant benefits. Right? It's also touted for having antioxidant properties that can counteract free radicals, thereby reducing oxidative stress and potentially lowering certain risk of diseases. Oh, it also improves hydration and absorption, right? Kangen water is said to be microclustered, a term implying that its molecules are smaller and more readily absorbed by the cells, leading to better hydration compared to regular water. I can't make this up, but in some of the marketing, they say that it's more wet. Their water is more wet than normal water. I'm not making that up. It's more wet than normal water.
Have you also seen the one where it's like the water molecules are too big to hydrate you? Like, yep. I've seen this. The water molecules are too large, so you can't absorb it. What?
Yeah, it's from tap water. The molecules are too big. Your body can't absorb it. But I've been living 29 years for something. The others are detoxifying your body and different organs that you have, preventing and even treating certain diseases. Okay, these are more of the controversial and unsupported claims. Suggest that Kangen water can help prevent and even treat a range of diseases, including and marketed cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Okay, all of this, it also increases your metabolism, relieves your depression. Anything else you can think of, just substituting your water makes sense, which I get their angle of marketing because water, your body is mostly made of water. So the marketing angle that they're taking is like, well, hey, don't you want that to be quality? It's a smart angle to take.
You want the good water.
You want the wet water. But there's one caveat. There's one caveat here. And that is absolutely none of it. Zero of these claims are supported by any data at all. Any data, period. And I think we've talked about this before. Why? A basic understanding of human physiology knows that the body has several mechanisms in place to make sure that it stays between that tightly regulated pH scale.
Yeah.
7.35 to 7.45. Because guess what? If you dipped outside of this range to more acidic or more basic, right? That small, small range. If you dipped outside of it, so they claim that the Western diet is making us more acidic, you wouldn't just be walking around with low energy. You can't sleep. You're fatigued. Bags under your eyes where they're like, yeah, it's because you're acidic. Your body's acidic. You would be hospitalized instantly or
with kidney failure.
Things would start to shut down. Like, think about that for one second. And this is just the basic understanding that we've went through in like the digestion episodes that we've done.
Yeah.
The first place water goes when you drink it is where? Your stomach, that has a pH of around 2 to 3.5. I think it's the most acidic environment in your body.
It is. Mm-hmm.
The most acidic environment in your body immediately neutralizes any alkalinity or pro-alkaline pieces in that food, water, anything, to break it down.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's like a hard stop. Like, you don't even need more than that. So like when Tony says there's no evidence to support this, it's because scientists and researchers know this. So they're not going to go study something that is impossible. Physiologically impossible.
It just blows my mind. And this is with any, like, these diets. There's diets that surround this. There's supplements. There's water. The Kangen is the biggest threat because it's thousands of dollars. But all of these things that promise to alkalize your body, or next time you see the water in the grocery store with the pH and it costs an extra few bucks because, oh, it's got a 9 pH or an 11 pH or whatever. It's marketing.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with your health.
Yeah.
Nothing. And that just blows my mind I guess it makes sense from a storytelling perspective of, if you had to create a story, if you were a marketing company.
An MLM.
It has a few solid bases of like, okay, well, water is important. We get that. The tap water is questionable in certain areas. Let's make that our plan. So it makes sense why they do it, but it just takes a little bit of thinking and digging to understand why, because that's what they sell you. Oh, Tom Brady drinks it. The goat. The greatest athlete of all time.
You know what gets me is, like, the most is when they do their little, like, quote-unquote experiments. I don't know how often they do this anymore, but it was so popular, like, a year or two
ago. Yeah, I saw it on social media all the time.
With the green tea. So what they'll do is they'll go and put a green tea bag in the alkaline water versus the regular water, and the color will change. So, like, in the alkaline water, for example, the green tea, like, bag will get really dark. It will get this, like, greenish yellow color versus in the regular water, it won't. And they'll say that this is because so that has to do with, like, the molecules, right? That's what they'll say. You can absorb more. Like, it has higher absorption. So you're going to be absorbing it more in your cells because it can pull this green tea out quickly versus regular water. So that's what would happen in your cells. It's going to hydrate you faster. That is what they're saying. No, it's so funny because the alkaline water, the green tea acts as an indicator, a pH indicator. So the certain green tea leaves, when they're in alkaline water, they just change the color of the water because it acts as an indicator. That's what you would use in the lab. There are certain indicators that will turn pink. There are certain indicators that will turn blue. And it's just an indicator. If it turns that yellowish green, it's telling you, oh, this is alkaline. Versus it won't change that color in a neutral solution, but it will in alkaline. It's literally just telling you it's alkaline water. That's what it's doing. So they'll just completely make things up. That's the most hilarious to me. I'm
like a modern day magician.
Yeah. I'm like, green tea leaves are natural pH indicators. Like, we use the extracts from them in chem lab because they can tell you whether or not this is basic. That's all it's
doing.
That's
actually really funny. That's kind of hilarious.
I remember saying that once on a TikTok, and people just, what most people got from it was that I was annoying. I'm like, okay, never mind.
That's what sometimes on social media, you post a video, you think it's going to be good, helpful, and people are like, shut up.
This girl is so annoying. Like, just because you have a degree doesn't mean anything you say is right. You're so annoying. Why do you talk like that? I'm like, I'm going to go fuck myself. Bye.
That's how it works. Now, let's wrap it up. Give me your top three from this entire list of 10. So to go over the list of 10 again real quick. Week one, last week, we had AG1 or athletic greens. We had organic food labeling, Element, the electrolyte supplement, food sensitivity test, anything claiming to improve, track your blood glucose, blood sugar, if you're not a type 1, type 2, or pre-diabetic, so CGMs, supplements, things like that. Fat-burning workouts or fat-burning devices. Healing your gut or gut health supplements. Cryotherapy, Airbon, Herbalife, MLMs, or alkalizing diets, waters, supplements.
What are your top three?
If you had to say top three, if you had to rank them.
Okay, number one is going to be organic, like straight clear off the board.
Okay.
The organic label. Shit. Because they're all so bad. What's your number one?
That's a surprise. I'm not saying you do your three first.
I thought we were going to go tit for tat. Okay, so like, this is hard. Food sensitivity test.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know, because I think about it and I'm like...
You can make an argument for most of these to be in the top three. I'll give you that, Grace, because it is a challenging thing to rank.
I know, because then I think I'm like, an MLM is obviously like...
Do you want my three first? Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
I would rank organic food labeling as the number one scam.
Yeah, for sure.
Just because of how it is run by a body that's supposed to be entrusted, like the government, even though we kind of like, we the people...
The impact. The level of impact.
Yeah, but just the level of impact it's had on... health as a whole is by far, I think, dwarfs anything else. So I think organic food labeling is number one for me. Number two, honestly, I would say as of recently that this wouldn't have made my list a year ago, but that makes my list today would be healing your gut or gut health supplements. I mean, I was just looking at the trending data on Google Trends. It has increased by 800 to 1,000% just the search for gut health or bloating in the last several years.
Honestly, that was what I was toying with.
That's going to be my number two. And I think my number three would, even though it's not, I want to put Athletic Greens there because they've done an immaculate job at deceiving the public.
They could be under gut health supplement.
I was going to say that them and gut health would be tied for number two. And then number three would be companies like Herbalife, Airbon, that really, I mean, because they have just the sheer numbers, I think they've done, how much they've sold, how
they've
many
been around
people they've
forever.
Impacted. Decades they've been around. I think just by impact, I would put that in my top three.
Yeah.
So that would be mine.
Okay.
Does that change your mind? Do you agree? You can agree.
I'm gonna agree.
I got a good opinions to agree with.
Yeah.
No, that was a solid list. That was a good top 10 episode. That was a good top 10. I think I liked episode number one, but episode number two, I think, finished off the heat.
Yeah.
So that was solid. Now, anybody else, if you're over on premium, which again, it's just $5 a freaking month, we'll talk to you guys all on Friday for this week's AMA, where if you have questions about the episodes, more personal questions, individualized questions, you get to ask us and we respond. So we'll see everybody there this Friday. Everybody else, we will talk to y'all next Monday with a fresh new episode.